Welcome to High Truths on Drugs and Addiction, where national experts bring you facts and answers. I'm your host, Dr. Onit Lev, an emergency and addiction doctor who has served at the White House and still practices on the front lines. Right here on High Truths, you will learn from experts from around the globe and around all aspects of drugs and addiction. To grow this community of information and action, I hope you give us a five-star review. Come visit me on hightruths.com to learn more about the show or download a free prescription for naloxone. Carrying naloxone for drugs is like carrying an EpiPen for allergies. Today's episode is sponsored by Physicians for Healthy Communities, a physician-led organization that educates on the science of prevention to improve public health. Visit their website to learn how they prevent substance misuse while supporting individuals, families, and communities. Go to physiciansforhealthycommunities.org. Hello again, High Truth listeners. Get ready for a drug rehab conversation. I'm your host, Dr. Onit Lev. Drug rehab, as in a place to go for treatment to get sober from drugs or alcohol and start recovery. You do not always need to go away to a facility to get treatment. There are outpatient options and support groups. But if you need inpatient rehab, where do you go? That's the most complicated treatment question for me as an emergency physician. I can treat withdrawal, prescribe medications, manage dehydration, treat electrolyte imbalance. I can treat seizures and place people on a ventilator. But where do you go for rehab? And who will take your insurance? And what will work best for an individual patient? That's harder for me than treating status epilepticus. And there are so many stories of rehab scams. It is such a problem that the American Addiction Center's website has a page dedicated on how to avoid rehab scam. So what do I do for my patients? I ask our case managers to make suggestions. And sometimes they don't know. Ironically, if my patients have no insurance or Medicaid, I know where to refer them to outpatient treatment and detox. Our hospital even buys several detox beds each month because of the volume of patients we have who needs this type of care. However, those beds are only available for uninsured patients. If a patient has commercial insurance, a primary care doctor, it's sometimes harder to find addiction treatment. Today's episode is about drug rehab. My guest was referred to me by a publicist. Once in a while, I'm contacted through the High Truths website by people who want to be on my podcast. I rarely agree to these requests as I prefer to host people I'm familiar with. I made an exception for this episode. I was enticed by the promotion of rehab catering to the rich and famous and appearances on HBO specials. I typically treat the underserved, but people with power and money also suffer from addiction and deserve treatment. Listen to Richard Tate and judge for yourself how treatment for the rich and famous differs from those with less financial means. Richard Tate is founder and executive chairman of Carrera Treatment Wellness and Spa, an ultra-luxury addiction treatment facility in Los Angeles, California. On the other end of the financial spectrum, he is the executive chairman of One Methods Centers, more affordable substance use disorder treatment facilities. He is co-author of Ending Addiction for Good. To learn more about Richard Tate, check out the High Truths show notes. Richard Tate, welcome to High Truths.
Hey, how are you? Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for joining me. I think this will be an interesting conversation. I know that you are in recovery, help treat many others, have been on shows like HBO and Bill Maher, and you treat the rich and famous, which may be different than the population I'm used to.
Right. Well, I don't just treat the rich and famous. I bought a center. A friend of mine was calling me crying because he couldn't make payroll in 36 hours and he had 9 people in his center. And so I went and I bought that because when treatment centers go out of business, as you may or may not know, the employees, when they don't get paid, they walk out with furniture and TVs on the walls and they just abandon the clients, and the clients aren't going to ever go to treatment again. So I didn't feel like I had a choice. And so I wanted to get to it after a year, after we were doing well with Carrera. But when I was forced to do that, I hired a CEO that scales, and we're going to have 1,000 beds, to treat the military and the homeless. So that's my passion, really.
In Los Angeles County.
Correct.
Well, we'll talk about that. Let's talk about you a little bit. You were your little kid, wanted to grow up and be a lawyer, and instead became an entrepreneur of addiction treatment centers.
Right. Well, that was easy because I failed out of law school.
So tell us a little bit about your journey.
Well, I pretty much didn't draw a sober breath from 12 to 37. So for 25 years, I struggled with drug addiction or trying to get sober, right? It took me 3 years in AA just to get 30 days. So I was a real bad. My first AA meeting was in 1988. I didn't even get sober until 2023. So I'm sorry, 2003. So I'm sober 21 years today. So I'm 58 years old, and all but 12 of those years, I've either been using drugs or sober and helping people to get off drugs. So I had a bad run. Definitely. Yeah.
I'm sorry, but I'm proud of you that you're in recovery.
Thank you.
And how old were you when you were first exposed to drugs?
12. I was 12 years old. I stole.
What was your first drug?
Well, I stole pot out of my father's drawer. And so I was smoking pot at 12 years old.
Wow. Sadly, that's like some of my patients right now. Was addiction in your family? Was it a genetic thing?
No, it's not a genetic thing. It's a childhood trauma thing. You know, my kids are never going to have that problem because, you know, they were talking as, you know, right? And they know what they're saying, but we don't know. We don't know what they're saying. And so, you know, you get down on their level, you put away the phone, you connect with them. Wow, you must be really proud, right? And you do the whole thing where you connect with them and you make them feel like they're the most important thing in the world. So my kids aren't going to have a problem with that. You know, but when you're getting the shit kicked out of you as a 5-year-old all the way through until you're 15, okay, and your brothers are your middle brother is actually getting it the worst because he's a special child, right? It leaves a scar. And then what happens is, you know, you can't at a 5 years old. Remember when you were 5 years old, everything was like really big. I mean, you're looking up at everything. It's all overwhelming. And you go ahead and, you know, I'll give you something to cry about, and you smack them and you're stupid and all this other stuff over and over and over again. And then every time it happens, it gets reinforced. Pretty soon you're a 45-year-old man listening to this tape that's been running since you're 5 years old, okay? And you think you are bad, you know? And it's too scary for a 5-year-old or a 10-year-old or anything to say, you know, to formulate the thought, oh, my parents are just idiots, okay? You can't do that, okay? So instead you internalize it and you say, I'm bad. If these are the people who are supposed to love me and take care of me and they're not, and they're treating me like this, I'm bad. I deserve it. I'm bad. So, you know, that's one of the reasons why people come into treatment full of shame. They just think they're bad. And they just have to be told that that tape is not the truth, that they're the adult now. Okay. They're no longer a victim. Their parents cannot hurt them. A lot of times they're parents themselves, and you're the parent now. And you just let them know that it's a lie. Right. And you showed them all the reasons. And really, the one way that I get past that is I look at them and I say, hey, dude, there are no bad 5-year-olds. Right. And so, you know, that's where it comes from.
So, Richard, I'm so sorry. You were abused as a child, physically, it sounds like, and emotionally. That left you with a big hole in your heart that you filled with drugs.
Yeah, because if you feel less than, right, and your head's chewing on you all day, and then you get high and you get a break from that, you get a little relief from that, you're hooked. That's it.
So tell, did you have a lowest point, or is there such a thing as lowest point? Do you have to even wait for a lowest point?
I've had so many low points. I mean, so many low points. I've been shot at 3 times. Thank God I was never hit. A girl that I was doing drugs with shot too much heroin, turned purple and blue, and her breath was so shallow, she was going to die at any minute. And I had to drag her into the shower with the cold water and blow crack smoke into her mouth like I was doing CPR, okay, just to wake her up.
You know, it's interesting that you say that, because in several years ago, as a younger emergency physician, we would have people come into the emergency department after they were put in the shower to revive them. There was some kind of, message or some out there for people who are using drugs that, okay, if you're dying, get in the shower. And interestingly enough, I learned by reading Dopamine Nation that it actually does increase your dopamine to put in the shower, but it doesn't revive you. It doesn't reverse the opioids.
No, it doesn't. But what it does do is, in some small way, it wakes you up. It shocks you, right? The cold always shocks you. When I take a shower in the morning, I do the heat. And then at the end, my therapist taught me to put on the cold water for about 30 seconds. And I'm like, and I hate it. But then I'm up. So I think what happens is that may have a small something to do with it. But I know for a fact that if you're dying of opioids and you blow crack smoke into their mouth, that is definitely going to help. Right. So I just got lucky.
I don't know if that's going to help. But what made you think of not calling?
See, that's what I'm talking about. It's definitely going to help, because that's the difference between an academic and someone who's actually done the field research. Right. So if you would have seen it, you would have been like, oh, my God. I mean, maybe you're so smart. Maybe you would have said, oh, that's anecdotal. I don't know. But it makes sense, though, doesn't it? Your heart's slowing down, and so you take a drug to get your heart going fast.
All right. Well, I think I have to, respectfully disagree, because the way people die from opioids is from a respiratory depression. They stop breathing because their opioid receptors are saturated. That's why we say use naloxone, because it kicks out the opioids from the receptors. If you add meth to that, I see what you're thinking. It's like, okay, I have a down, so I'm going to bring you up. But I mean, that works as long as your opioid receptors are not full. Methamphetamine doesn't kick the opioids off their receptors. If you've overdosed to that point, then that's not going to revive you.
Well, then we'll both respectfully agree to disagree. But right. I like that. That's something I did not know. Thank you.
Okay. All right. So, but the thought of calling 911 at that time to help your friend, were you afraid of calling the police or ambulance to be involved because there's drugs involved?
Not at all. Not at all. I had no power. I was going to have the water shut off any day, and the phone was turned off. Right? I mean, I had no money. I had nothing. All the money, you know, you get money and it goes, you know, you're thinking, okay, I'm going to pay the rent. I'm going to pay the water and power. I'm going to pay, right? Dot, 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 the phone. And, you know, the money hits your hands and they turn into crack coupons, right? I mean, it's just, that's the way it works.
Crack coupons. Interesting. All right. So tell us about your experience in treatment, your personal experience. You've had many years of failed and then finally, thank God, successful treatment.
I didn't go to treatment. I never went to a legit rehab. I called a rehab early on, and they told me it was going to be $20,000 to go, and obviously I didn't have insurance. And I said to the woman who answered the phone, if I had $20,000, I wouldn't have a cocaine problem. And she goes, excuse me? And I said, you don't understand what I'm saying? And she said, no, I don't. And I said, okay, well, if you don't understand what I'm saying, then you can't help me. And, you know, I moved on. And years later, maybe a decade later, I ended up, you know, I was going to AA constantly, constantly.
Was that helping you?
AA, I love AA. I am the biggest advocate for AA in the world. But it's a support group. It's not treatment. And it's, how do I say this? It's foundational. If I wouldn't have had that foundation, I'm not sober today. Okay. But most people need more. The treatment resistant folks need more. And so what I ended up doing was I ended up going to sober livings. And so now I've got AA and the sober livings, and that's not working either. And then I went to therapy, and I've got the therapy, the sober livings, and the AA. And after about at 11 months, my therapist said to me, sweetie, are you getting anything out of this? And I said, no. She said, well, then why are you coming every day, every week, on time, without fail, for the last 11 months? And I told her the truth. I said, it's because I'm slow. But I know I'll get it eventually. I just have to keep coming back. Because, you know, therapy is a language, you know, and I'm slow. I am. And so at 15 months, I finally got it. And I gave her a hug and a kiss. And I thanked her for taking care of me. And I told her that I think I need a man to take me the rest of the way. And she agreed. And her name was Margie Fetting. And Margie is no longer with us. Wow. Did she take care of me?
Oh, that's very nice. So you finally, that combination is what turned you around.
Right. Well, that combination is essentially rehab. I basically gave myself the best rehab I could, that I could afford, with the lodging, right? You're in a safe space, right? Where they're testing you to make certain that you're sober, so you're accountable. I'm going to AA. So think group therapy in kind of a weak kind of way. But with community, we're communal beings. We need community, right? And then with the therapy. So I created my own little thing.
That's great. And luckily, it really, thank God that you did that before fentanyl was around and available. Otherwise, you may not be here today.
No, I'd be dead for sure. Because 7 out of 10 pills and 7 out of 10 powders are laced with fentanyl today. I got kids coming into treatment now. You do an assessment, right, before they come in. What are you using? For how long? How much? Right? That kind of thing. And they list all their drugs, and all their drugs are in the toxicology report. But they don't mention fentanyl. And it comes back with fentanyl in it. And I'm like, dude, you're on fentanyl. I don't take fentanyl.
They don't know that they are.
Of course not. And that's what makes this different than everything else. And like the crack epidemic of the 80s and 90s, right? You're buying cocaine, that's what you're getting. You're buying heroin, that's what you're getting. Today, you're buying cocaine, heroin, pills on the street. That's not what you're bargaining for, right? And right. That's why these kids are dying.
Yeah, I think that's important. If you do talk about at International Overdose Awareness Day, that'd be a good point for you to make, because there are some people who die of fentanyl that have a substance use disorder, and there are many that don't. They just made a mistake and dropped dead.
That's right. In fact, I got it back, I think it was 2016, when they were talking about, they had, I don't remember what they're called, the propositions, I think they're called. And we had a proposition on, and one of them said, they wanted to take California from a medical marijuana use to a recreational use. Mm-hmm. And I was on the news countless times talking about how that was a good thing. And you know, people in my community were just coming out of the woodwork saying, this treatment center owner is advocating recreational marijuana use. And so, and I was. And the reason I was is because in the states where there were legalized marijuana on a recreational basis, there was a 25% less chance of an opioid overdose.
Oh, Richard, we're going to have to disagree again, because that was fake news that came from the marijuana industry. And once they repeated the study and extended it, they cheated on the study. Once they extended the time, they showed that actually in Paris, where they legalized it, there was more opioid deaths, not less.
Okay. We're going to have to agree to disagree.
All right. Oh, my gosh. More fake news there. All right.
Are you an internist or a psychologist?
I'm an emergency physician and an addiction medicine doctor.
Okay.
But, all right. You still do good work. I'm still happy that you are doing well. And that
Dr. David Smith, who I believe coined the phrase addictionologist, right? And I think, if I'm not mistaken, he was he was the head of the AMA, right? And when we were talking, we talked about specifically that, and he agreed with me. So I don't know what study.
I do, and I have it. It's on that International Academy on Science and Impact of Cannabis. We have the study that originally said that, and then the one that was showed that that was debunked. And again,
commissioned the study.
Good news.
Nobody, just an academician. But the study that was commissioned that showed that opioids help. I mean, cannabis helps with opioid addiction. That was done by the cannabis industry. The one that debunked it was not sponsored by anybody. But we'll leave that because I don't want to keep disagreeing with you.
Let's leave it.
All right. So you must have learned from your own experience on treatment. Now you're working to help other people. And we know a lot of, and you treat the rich and famous, right? Because you say that your treatment center, Carrera Wellness Spa, for ultra luxury, not just luxury, but ultra luxury. And right. I feel like sometimes it's really hard to treat the rich and famous. And thinking about Michael Jackson, Prince, Matthew Perry, I don't know that they got such good medical care. I think it's harder to cater to the people who are rich, who have power, because it's harder to say no to them.
Well, that's those three people that you mentioned all had physicians that couldn't say no to celebrity. They were enamored by it, right? And that's what happens with celebrity. You get some star, you know, effing doctor, right? That that is enamored with a Prince or a Michael Jackson or, you know, a Matthew Perry. I mean, who doesn't love Chandler Bing, right? I mean, he's the greatest thing in the world. So that's always going to happen in that realm if you have physicians that are not desensitized to the process of stardom.
Right. So what do you do at your treatment center? Do you have physicians who are working at your treatment center? Do they know how to say no nicely to the stars?
Well, we've got integrity, right? So I call this a love call, right? It's all about, remember when I said everybody comes into treatment with shame? Okay. So what you really want to do is you want to form that therapeutic alliance. In any treatment center, that's the goal, to form that therapeutic alliance. And what makes Carrera different is all client-facing people have essentially a therapeutic alliance. So, and I've got something that I created called client care, where I've always got two therapists roaming the center looking for the person with their head in their hands, right? So they can roll up on them anytime, what's going on, you know, write the whole thing and do a session right there. So, you know, I believe You know, I had a lot of time to think about it from selling my last center, Cliffside Malibu. I don't know if you ever heard of it. But when I sold it in 18 and I started again in 23, I had a lot of time over those 5 years to think about, you know, the right way to do it. How could I do it better this time? And it occurred to me that I'd never met anyone who truly loved themselves that was trying to kill themselves with drugs and alcohol. So this time, I wanted a full spa in the center. Now, why would I want that? It wasn't a vanity play, okay? The reason I wanted a world-class spa in my center, and I took the manager straight out of the Ojai Valley Inn, which was, it's the top 100 spa in the country. So they just redid that one in our center. And the reason I did it was because people come in so broken in every way, physically, spiritually, mentally, emotionally, they're just wrecked. They're washed. And it occurred to me that self-care leads to self-esteem, which leads to self-love. And so I literally wanted these people to start having self-care, menu of massage, facials, scrubs and wraps, acupuncture, all that stuff, right? But it's more than that. It's a lesson, right? It says, I'm worth it, which is why we take them to get their eyes checked and their teeth done and a physical and their blood drawn, all this stuff, because they're broken. And what that says is, you're worth getting your teeth cleaned every 6 months. You're worth, you know, you get that, you get people come in with all sorts of gum disease and everything, you know, that leads to a heart condition, right? It can. So not to mention the pain that they're usually in, right? And so, you know, the eyes, I can't tell you how many people have said after going to their eye exam, I can't believe I've been walking around blind like this for so long. Because if you can't see right, you have nothing else to compare it to. You think everybody sees like that, right? So especially for a drug addict. So all of these things, and it's all in the details, everything works together, right? So we just want to impress upon these people, you're not bad, you're just sick, you're worth it. Let me show you how to live. And, you know, it doesn't really matter how much money you have, because if you're a drug addict, that's your lifestyle and you're deteriorating that way.
Yeah, that is a good message about learning to love yourself. And I guess that's one way to do it.
We agree. Let's throw a party. We agree.
I think that is important. But it sounds like fun, like you said, like the Ojai Inn, like, you know, like I don't want to go there. Just for a vacation.
It's better than that. In a typical rehab, you talked about ultra luxury, and this is why I say it. First of all, I wouldn't smoke crack in the luxury treatment centers in the country. I wouldn't even do it. That's how bad they are. Let's start with the premise that it's not luxury if you have to share a room. Okay? I think we can all agree on that. So, do we agree on that?
Like, would you sharing a room or not sharing a room? Yes. I think it is nicer to have your own room. I don't know if there is accountability of sharing a room if you're really bad off, that at least somebody has an eye on you. I don't know.
Right. Well, that's why we do 15-minute bed checks. But, you know, all these rooms have a private room, a private ensuite bathroom, and their own temperature controls. Right. So this one's hot, this one's cold, you know, they're not happy. And, you know, a drug addict where, you know, it's the drugs are calling them, right? They're looking for any reason to leave. And I don't want them to leave. Right. So that's why we have TVs in every room, and we DVR their favorite shows, because they haven't slept in years. They haven't fallen asleep in years, sometimes decades. They've passed out.
It's interesting you're calling your clients and probably yourself a drug addict when the you know, in the medical communities is being taught, don't use that, that that is stigmatizing language.
Yeah, I don't give a shit about that. And let me tell you something else. I've had my own homeless person that I took right off the street and had a conversation with somebody this morning. And they were saying, no, they're experiencing homelessness. And I just hung up on them. I said, you're an idiot, and hung up the phone. And the reason they're an idiot and I hung up the phone is because I've done more before noon today to deal with that than they've done in their entire lives. I'm not interested in the whole
politically correct language.
I'm not interested in that. I think that's nonsense. Hey, how about Latinx? I've got more Hispanic friends than anybody. I've asked them, you prefer to be called Latinx? They don't even know what the hell I'm talking about. So this is all nonsense. You know, this is all tissue paper is toilet paper. Motor lodges or motels. It's just, they're different. There are different words that mean the same thing. And, you know, when I get told it's substance use disorder, I've been told that 1,000 times since I got back. Right. And I'm just like, can't get the hell out of my office. Okay. Like, I don't help enough people. I've treated over 10,000 people. I've given thousands of people back to their families. Okay. So when somebody tells me that, it's offensive. Not, you didn't know that. I'm not.
No. I we're called upon it because sometimes, you know, the politically correct language changes so often that you're like walking on eggshells, not sure if you're saying the right word. I think it empowers people. If you, as somebody who had an addiction, calls themselves that gives you permission to call other people out on that. I think so.
And not just that, but, you know, you have these kids, right? And they come in and they're always taking their will back, right? I'm doing great. Maybe you need more time. I mean, this is like, you know, we don't walk on water here. You can't use for 2 decades and walk out of here in 30 days. That's not how this works, right? And I'm doing great. And you got to remind them, Yale Law School was great. You're in rehab. You know what I mean? Come on, man, let's get I mean, plain talk, common sense with the heart of a servant. You know, I don't have one person that is desensitized to the process of helping another human being. It's a love call.
Yeah, it is a work of passion. And since we have you on Scream and you've got a nice cigar there, you want to give a comment on that? That's like your last vice that you're just not going to, no need to give up.
Well, you know, there are no more girls. There are no more drugs. There is no more sugar. You know, this is cigarettes. I haven't smoked a cigarette in 30 years. You know, this is all I got. And I'm not giving it up. So it may look elitist. It may not look great, but again, I'm not running for office and I don't care. So I need it. I love it. I don't need it. I love it.
So tell us more about Carrera Center, what it's like, besides it's like, you know, the place is a spa, you got your own climate control, you got your best DVDs, you got probably celebrity chefs cooking for you.
I got Stevie Wonder chef and I hired him.
I just made that up. I didn't know I was right.
No, absolutely right. In fact, there's a funny story. I hired her without tasting the food. And the people who were with me to start were like, oh, dude, what did you just do? You don't hire someone without tasting the food. And I simply looked at them and said, so you've got better taste buds than Stevie Wonder. Is that what I'm hearing?
Crickets. Yeah. So do you go there for dinner just for yourself, just because it's so good?
Yes. only a couple times for dinner. But at least a dozen times for breakfast. I don't know how this woman makes breakfast taste good. Breakfast is breakfast, pretty much, right? It's like, how do you make breakfast taste good? I don't get it.
All right. So what's a day like? I'm checking in as a client. Got my nice little room, food. How am I getting better besides that I like being here?
Okay. So you wake up. And the first thing you do is you go get your wheatgrass, your wellness shot, maybe a green drink or a protein smoothie, right? And then you go work out. Then you go take a shower. and you go to your first group. Now, working out can be anything they want. It can be Pilates, it can be Tai Chi, it can be weight training, it can be cardio. I had somebody who just left after 60 days, an older gentleman who was maybe 75. And, you know, I get cold now. I'm 58. I don't know why we get colder, but we do. When we're kids, we can run around all day long without a jacket, right? My kids won't even take a jacket on a rainy day to school, right? I'm freezing. I'm bundled up like I'm going to the Alps. And so what I did, and this is the level of detail that—
You got to check your thyroid.
Is that what it is?
Well, I don't know. It's just my casual physician advice. Just next time you get your blood work, check your thyroid.
Isn't it because your skin gets thinner maybe too?
No, your metabolism is different. But anyway, that's just my little tip.
Thank you. I'll get my thyroid checked. And so what we did was I told them to put the one of the pools, we got three pools. I told them to put one of the pools at 90 degrees. So that way he could come in and use the water weights, right? And move his body comfortably. I mean, this is our hook is that we attune to people's needs before they even know they have a need, because A, I don't want them leaving, and B, because they're important, they're worth it, right? So you wake up and you do any workout you want, and then you go have breakfast, and then you get in the shower, and then you start your first group, right? Now, the perfect thing about us, the greatest thing about us is the people. When Cliffside burnt down in the Woolsey Canyon fire, right? I used to go up there to check on the property. And I used to see my old employees sitting there drinking coffee, crying. And I would say to them, that Cliffside isn't a place, it's a people. You are Cliffside. These are just things. Don't worry about it. Go to work. And when I made the mistake initially of taking over one method, my affordable center, where you can literally go for like $500 deductible a lot of times and get 30 days of treatment, right? When I had made that mistake, I came home and I told the four women that I was working with that no longer worked at Cliffside, but that were at Cliffside with me. And they run down to One Method to check out what I just did, because I bought the place in 3 hours with no due diligence. I just couldn't let these people be abandoned like that, right? So they come back and they're like, oh my God, what did you just do? They don't have anything. They don't have nurses. They don't have RAs. They got six therapists that don't do anything, but they've got nothing, Rich, nothing. You bought nothing. And I said, don't worry about it. I'll fix it by the morning. And I cried myself to sleep. Okay. I just screwed us all. And I woke up in the morning and I'm shaving, and I don't like to look at myself in the mirror, because who wants to see their grandfather in the mirror, right? But it hit me when I looked at myself and I said, everybody comes home today. And I called 10 of the best people at Cliffside ever. And I said, I'm sorry for the late notice, but everybody comes home today. And in 1 hour, 10 people gave their notice at Cliffside. I wanted to keep it completely lean at that point. We're going to go to war just with us. We know what we're doing. We'll do several jobs. We know how to do this. We can get it done. Everyone's like, no problem. Well, 10 days later, the president of my company walks in, and she says, they're calling. And I said, who's calling? And she said, the people from Cliffside. And I said, well, what do they want? And she says, they want to know what's wrong with them. They want to know why they can't come. And I said, how many? And she said, 14. And I said, take them all. and six more followed. I have 30 of the finest people in treatment that you can have. We're not 8 months old. We're 21 years old. The people that I have working here in treatment all have, the client-facing people, the therapist, the case manager, they all have over 10,000 hours of treatment experience. Most have 20 and some have 30. From the finest treatment facility in the world that I found that was so efficacious, I hope I used that correctly, that it was sold without going to market. Right? I mean, it's true. It was true. It was an MS True love call and it worked. And now they're all here. So when you want to know what's special about Carrera, that is what's special about Carrera.
You have a lot of passion for the people.
Yeah. And the first 100 people that worked here, invitation only. Okay? Because that's our hook. Our hook is respect and empathy and compassion and safety and attunement and love. That's our hook. That is what I'm known for. And, you know, I make a must, right? And so they're not just the best practitioners in the industry. They're the most loving practitioners in the industry.
Do you allow people to take medications?
I don't allow anything. That's that's between the client and their physician, right? So whatever they need, they're going to get. So for example, during a detox, I got a policy, right? Nobody suffers in a detox. I want this to be like the average flu, okay? I don't want, there is no intense suffering here. That I don't go for. So other than that policy, right, which I go over to make certain that we're aligned before they're hired, I don't get involved in medical decisions.
Yeah. Do you have your own, addiction psychiatrist or physician, or people just have their own?
I have two of those here. I also have probably the finest woman's physician in the country, because his bedside manner is so good and he makes women feel so safe that I thought that was going to be a valuable addition to the staff as well. But yeah, we've got, three physicians and three psychiatrists.
Yeah. And so isn't it harder for them also to treat the celebrities and to be able to say no? Because you want everything, you want them to be comfortable, but sometimes you have to say no.
No, because, and I'll tell you why, because the doctors that I have working here have treated anyone who's anyone in this town, and really anyone who's anyone in the country, right? I mean, we've had people from all over the world come here to be treated. Royal families of Saudi Arabia and other countries, politicians, families from everywhere, including here, okay? The biggest movie stars in the world.
Well, I feel that that's very intimidating. Like, they expect things and they're paying a lot of money, and I'd say, well, I want my Ambien. Can you say no?
Well,
not healthy for you.
That's an excellent question. I just sold my company 5 years ago, 6 years ago now, for nine figures with no debt and no partners. So I have no problem saying no to anything.
Yeah, okay. I think I get that about you. You can say no.
Well, when I say no, I do it however they need it, right? So at first I go about it in a very loving way. Right, babe, that's not what we're going to do here, and this is why. And then when I get frustrated, I'm like, hey, the answer is fucking no, because I fucking said so. And that's literally, and when you say that to someone who is a star or somebody who is a big celebrity or someone who's whatever, whatever they are, because everybody's somebody in this town, right? You know, they're like, oh, okay. You know, I get it. Yeah, some people have walked out and I can live with it. Okay. But you either have integrity or not. And in this business, having integrity is like winning the lottery.
Yeah. So how much does it cost to go to your center?
At Carrera, the rooms are different prices, but it goes up to $165,000 a month.
That's a lot of money. Yeah.
Yeah, but you're working on a 20 to 25% margin. So I don't go ahead and keep up with the pricing in the industry. What I do is I just give them everything they could humanly possibly need or want, right? So that their experience and treatment is as good as it can possibly be. Then I figure out what that's going to cost, and then I charge an extra 20 to 25%, whatever it is, right? So it is what it is, but we're all on the same margin. You're just getting better treatment and better care.
So you have two different places. You have an ultra luxury center, and you said that you have another center that you bought because you had to help people, that you just take insurance rates. And how do you compare? Do you feel one gives better quality in treatment than the other, or one just has better food and spa?
Well, that's an excellent question. First of all, it's the first true ultra luxury treatment facility for ultra high net worth individuals ever. And there won't be another one because private equity can't do it because they don't know what the hell they're doing. And anybody who has the style and the taste to do it doesn't know the treatment business. So it ain't gonna ever be done again.
And insurance doesn't pay for that.
They can offset it, but typically insurance today doesn't pay more than a grand a day, right? So it'll pay for the $30,000 and they can offset. Absolutely. We've got our own revenue cycle management company to do that. But to answer your question, most of the people that work at Carrera also work at One Method. So they're essentially getting the same treatment. And the way I did that legally was I formed a company, a staffing company, right? So I put the staff wherever they're needed. And so really the only difference is shared rooms, not all shared rooms, some private, but mostly shared. And the food, much better. And the accommodations, much better. We don't give a massage in an in-network facility, right? But the actual treatment itself is almost the same.
And how do you measure your success in both places? How do you know that people did well? Do you check on them and a year later and know that they're still sober? How do you tell?
Well, the way I measure my success is being a good father. Okay, that's the way I measure my success. But with relation to the business, treatment centers don't typically have more than a 1 year success rate, a 10% success rate. Now, everybody says it's different because everybody.
That's a very low percentage.
Right, it is. But when they lie about it, and they say they've got a better success rate than they do, that's typically what they're going off of, because everyone's got a different definition for success, right? Or for success rate. I've got a 60% success rate, okay? And what they mean by that is from day one to day 30, the people who have completed their program, 60% of them didn't get loaded in the treatment center. That's not a success rate. Okay. That's a marketing tactic.
I'm going to agree with you on that, Richard.
Right. We're two and two. Two and two. Right. That's 500%. We're going to the Hall of Fame. Where was I? I'm sorry.
So how do you, how do you know measure success in, of your?
So we measure success. And again, we haven't been open a year yet, but we measure success 1 year sober. Now, as you outside of the treatment center. Okay. So here's the problem with
that. I like that.
Here's the problem with that. There's no way to actually find out exactly because some people don't call you back. Right. And that doesn't necessarily mean they're loaded. It means that they showed up, they did their time, they've got big lives. Okay. And they don't have time to return the call. Now, most of the people that come do return the phone call for me or for the person dealing with alumni that is also in client care. So they have a close relationship with them. Right. But I personally call people the day they get home just to make certain that they're okay and they know what they're supposed to be doing for that day. Nobody does that. Then we call them at 30, 60, 90 days, 6 months and 1 year.
You do that at the luxury and the other place, both places?
Of course. Of course. In fact, I get 100 calls a day and, you know, we can only place less than 10% of them. So for all the people that want to be referred, some of them are pissed because they can't come to either center, and I get it. But I have a business development team that does nothing but refer the calls that we can't place to other centers that can place them, whether they're on Medi-Cal or whatever, or Obamacare, whatever it is. And the reason we made that a must was because I wanted to make certain that no human being that ever called us felt like we didn't care about them because they didn't have the money or insurance. And of course,
I think we're going to agree on that too, that so many people need this type of treatment and they just can't get in.
Right. That's right. And, you know, just to illustrate that point, when I left Cliffside in 18, there were 18,000 and change treatment centers in the country. At the end of last year, the number was 12,000 and change. By the end of this year, it's going to be 9,000 and change. So how the hell do we lose 50% of the nation's treatment centers in 6 years? It's an excellent question. I'm glad you asked it. The reason that happens is because insurance companies used to pay 67 cents on the dollar. Okay. Now they pay about 25 cents on the dollar. Okay. So if you're working off that 25% margin that we were talking about, and you lose 60% of your revenue, you're broke. And so these places are going out of business in droves during the worst opioid epidemic we've ever had. And Trank is coming to a suburb near you, and that is xylazine mixed with fentanyl. And it's a flesh-eating drug where you literally hunch over, okay? Your knuckles are dragging from the ground. You've got openings in your arm, and people are getting amputations, okay? It's coming. It's coming.
All sorts of weird drugs are coming, and it's changing from day to day. What are your tips for a family who wants to get a loved one into treatment? How do they know that they're going to a good rehab center and not a scam?
Well, I always say, if you're going to be referred to a treatment center, it better be from your doctor or your psychiatrist or your therapist. Okay. You can't look online because these people are lying. They're just lying. They have to. They can't. It's a popularity contest now, with all of the reviews and everything, the phony reviews and the phony claims and all that stuff. What was the first
part? Yeah. That, how do you know that it's not a scam? How do you go to, you know, you're going to a good.
You don't, unfortunately, you're never going to know. Most places. And I don't know if it's most places, but I think it is. There's no evidence for
it. If you go to the big names, you know, Hazleton.
Hazleton is AA based mostly. It's not a ton of therapy, certainly not known as a therapy rehab, right? It's very old school. If you're addicted to drugs and alcohol today in 2024, you don't know better. You just don't. There's more interventions today. You can do the somatic stuff. You can do the EMDR, everything. There's everything out there now that you can do, right? And so it's different than a Hazleton or a Betty Ford. Believe me, I've had more people come from those places than anywhere. And it's just different.
So, Richard, tell us, what would you want everybody to know about addiction and getting treatment and staying sober?
Well, here's the thing that the families have to know, okay? You ain't growing out of this one. We're out of time. This isn't something you're going to grow out of. This isn't something that where you're going to have somebody hit rock bottom. Those days are over. We're out of time. When 70% of the pills and powder on the street have fentanyl in them, it's not if, it's when you're going to die. Look at it this way. You got a chocolate chip cookie. You bite into it. You got too many chips. The chips are fentanyl. You're dead. But sometimes you bite into the cookie and there are no chips. What do? You take another cookie and now you're dead. Okay? So it's not if, it's when. It's Russian roulette. And there is nothing more unnatural than burying your child. Nothing. It's one of the reasons I came back, because I felt if I didn't come back and help deal with this, I was going to be punished. And I can't risk it.
Punished emotionally, you mean?
I didn't want anything bad to happen to my kids.
Right.
And now what happens is, I just did a podcast yesterday where I had someone on my podcast, and she's been, her drink has been spiked a couple times. She smoked pot that was laced with something. And, you know, every time these girls, even if they don't die, they get sexually assaulted all the time. That's the thing now, especially with social media. You know, when you and I were kids, you know, we got dates, we walked up to people and we actually had the conversation. These kids today, because of social media, have zero skills, zero, right? And so it's more prevalent today to get your drink spiked and your drugs spiked, right? We called them being roofied back in my day, right? And all. Now it's just whatever the hell it is. It's all this stuff. And, you know, these girls are really victims today. And I've got a daughter.
Yeah. You have one daughter?
Daughter and a son.
A daughter. And how old are they?
My daughter's 14, just started ninth grade. And my son just started sixth grade and he's 11.
And what do you tell them about drugs?
Ugh, I've had this. I always tell parents, you have to have these conversations early and often. And I've had this a dozen times with my kids. And I was in the car the other day with one of her girlfriends, and I held this kid the day she was born. So I know all her friends, right? From birth, really. And were at latest kindergarten. And I was talking to them about it. And I looked in my rearview mirror and I saw my daughter's eyes roll. I pulled over and I said, no way. I don't care if you're embarrassed. I held this kid when she was born, okay? You have children as old as I did in life. You don't just love your kids. You love all kids, right? And so I needed to make certain that these kids knew there's no shame in this. This is the law written in stone. And they understand, because my kids ever have a problem, I'm going to duct tape them to a coffee table and feed them out of a dog bowl. Okay. That's how they're going to detox. That I'm not going to have that. There is zero chance that I would ever treat 10,000 people and then have years, maybe two decades into my kids and have them experimenting with drugs. Okay, you can't do it anymore. It's a rite of passage that the kids don't have today. And, you know this, your frontal cortex isn't developed. That's a huge reason why they believe that they're indestructible.
Right. And the social norm when talking to kids is that most kids actually don't use drugs. I know it seems like, especially if you're working in addiction treatment or me, like an emergency department, that drugs are everywhere and everybody uses them. But that's not true. Most kids don't do drugs. Their brain is continuing to grow till 25 years old. And you could tell your kids, hey, most kids don't do drugs. And I'm proud of you for protecting your brain till you're 25 years old, at least.
Right. Our experience is, and you're right about that. You're 1,000. See, we're four to two now. I absolutely agree with that. The problem is with human behavior, you don't focus on all the good. You have laser focus on the bad, the novel, right? And so it feels like more people are using than
like that.
And I don't want any ambiguity whatsoever. My kids, and thank God I've got good kids. They're respectful and they're kind and they're empathetic and they're funny and they're smart and in a time where people with the computer courage and social media and people being not nice to each other, right? My kids understand that being kind never goes out of style. Right. And they listen. My kids don't not listen. So I feel good about it. But, that's what happens when you put in the work and you were with a woman that you had children with. That is probably the finest quality human being on the face of the earth. So when you have two older parents that are over-therapized, right? You have emotionally mature children.
Yeah, that's nice. Richard, thank you so much for joining us. I'm proud of your sobriety. I thank you for, really, it seems like a mission in your life to helping others, rich and otherwise, and protecting the brain of your children. May they grow to be healthy, happy, and drug-free.
Doctor, thank you so much for having me. And you're probably right about those other two things. And I will put my addiction research fellow on that the minute we get off the phone.
Hi there, it's Dr. Lev again. I have a little addendum. After the podcast was over, Richard admitted that he may be wrong about methamphetamine helping an opioid overdose and that marijuana legalization decreases overdoses. I took the time to share with him and his chief of staff about the ISAC website to look at the medical literature. ISAC, the International Academy on Science and Impact on Cannabis, ISAC1.org, has a medical library, and I walked him through the literature on opioids and cannabis, showing that actually places that legalize marijuana have more overdoses, not less, and that cannabis use can decrease the effectiveness of opioids. I also explained how opioid receptors work on opioids, Suboxone, Naltrexone, and Naloxone. Richard really appreciated the explanation and gave me a very nice compliment that I fit the quality mold of being on the Carrera staff. Thank you for listening to High Truths on Drugs and Addiction, where you learn from experts from around the globe and around all aspects of drugs and addiction. This week's episode would not be possible without the generous support of our sponsor. A sincere and warm thank you to Physicians for Healthy Communities. Visit physiciansforhealthycommunities.org and view their video and resource library. High Truth's producer is Dave Rivas from Davey Boy Productions. I'm your host, Dr. Ronit Lev. We hope we brought your day a little bit more High Truths.